Welcome to Dining Room Stories with Domar and Andrea, where we take you behind the scenes of the restaurant business world with stories and conversation that inspire. Today, we are super excited to have an exceptional guest, a living legend, TV presenter, owner of Caterina's Cucina and Bar since 1995, the queen of Melbourne Italian hospitality, Caterina Borsato. Welcome, Caterina.
Oh, Omar, thank you for that huge introduction. Oh my gosh, I don't know whether I'm the queen, but I'm certainly part of Melbourne hospitality.
You definitely are a queen. Caterina, welcome to Dining Room Stories. To start, can you share with us your journey from the early days to become a prominent figure in the Melbourne hospitality scene?
Gosh, it's a long journey. Because you know I'm over 60 now, don't you? So that means I've got lots to say and lots of experiences. But look, I was a girl that was raised in the country. My father, of course, was one of those early waiters at the Society Restaurant. So he was part of that early group of Italians that made such a difference to Melbourne dining. You know, they brought Italian food to the level, I think. It started with them and then we've brought it up. So I grew up in the country, came to Melbourne, went to Melbourne University. And the pivotal point that changed my life, I got a scholarship to go study in Italy. Now, you know that Italians born in Australia, they usually don't speak good Italian because we speak dialect. And I wasn't really formally trained anyway. I got this scholarship to study in Italy and I got to Italy and I felt alive. That's what happened to me. I was in Perugia by myself and I was watching them having spritzes, walking to nighttime theatres, singing in the streets. It was everything that I perhaps didn't see here in Australia. Firstly, in the country, we didn't have it. But coming to Melbourne, I think it was still a very raw time and hospitality hadn't come into its full yet. So anyway, when I came back, even though I was studying to be an interpreter, I thought, I don't want to do this. I want to work with food and wine. And so that's how my journey started. I have not been formally trained, but I've had lots of formal training on the job. One of the things that I did realise, Omar, was it's actually not enough. To run a restaurant, it's not enough just to open up and sell food and wine and, you know, sell an experience. You've got to know a lot more than that. And part of that journey has been in creating a story around myself, and that's all through partnerships and relationships. So I got a job with Carlton Football Club, which was incredibly important for me because it introduced me to a corporate market. So, and you know, I run a corporate.
And what year was that?
So, oh my gosh, back in 1984.
Wow.
Now you really know my age, okay?
Yeah, no, I'm born in 86.
Oh, you weren't even born. Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. But 1984, and it was such a cultural lesson for me. Here it was, this Italian girl in the middle of this football club, which I was surrounded mainly by Australians, even though the Italians and the Jewish money was in the club. But I was working with mainly Australians. It was hysterical. And I remember going in there with red shoes and a black skirt. I still remember it. And they looked at me as if I was crazy. I'd got dressed up to go to my first day on the job. Anyway, there was a little bit of resistance, but I fell in love with the idea of a corporate market, and they taught me many things. And those were the people that when I did open my first restaurant in 1989, they all followed me. See, it was developing the relationship. They would never have known who I was. So I did a bit of groundwork before. After the football club, I also worked for Spotless Catering Services, who took over the catering at the Carlton Football Club, and then they moved me onto the MCG. So I did special events like Square Leg, which was catering around the cricket. You know, Australians love cricket. Yeah. And various things. We did a performance of Aida at the football club, all sorts of stuff. And I loved my time, but it was the corporate market. But I always knew that my calling was to go back into restaurants at some form because I supported myself at Melbourne University by working in restaurants at the time.
Fantastic. And then after that period, 1995, you opened your...
No, I opened up a restaurant before that.
Before? What was called?
It was called Borsato Ristorante.
Borsato, in Lygon Street?
In Nicholson Street. And it was in the wrong spot. It was, everything was wrong about it, but yet we managed to actually get a chef's hat in the second year of our business. And it was a nighttime restaurant. We didn't get much trade down there because it was, as I said, it was not in the right spot. Yeah. But we did manage to capture an audience, and we were busy.
And how did you move to Queen Street, where you opened the iconic Caterina's in 1995?
Well, do you know that business relationships are like marriages?
They are.
Like, it can be hit and miss.
Are
you together for hours upon hours? But more than that, it revolves around money. Unfortunately, that partnership did not go very well. I was incredibly raw. I knew very little about business. I was like this bright-eyed girl from the country thinking, oh, my God, this is my dream. Well, it was a broken dream for me. But I learned about business. And I learned that you have to actually be in control and not let someone tell you this is how it is. This is what we should be doing. No. So anyway, it was 3 years. It did put me on the map, and I was doing a little bit of radio then. A guy called Ross Campbell, who was on AW, got me on air. You know, I was just wanting to explore hospitality in Melbourne. I also realised that I wanted to make sure that I would be true to myself. And even though of course you have to chase money, you've got to survive.
Absolutely.
But I had a dream about bringing real Italianism to Melbourne. And at the time, there weren't many people really doing it, but Bill Marchetti, who was there during that time, and I had many conversations with him. Now, you're probably too young, and so are you, to know who he is, but he was a major force in Melbourne. Marchetti's Latin, to me, is the restaurant that brought squid ink risotto, la bolognese, all the classicals, but really raised up. And he had the top people in Melbourne going there. I mean, Florentino's was there, but it was Marchetti's Latin that, for me, was the pinnacle. Anyway, so, yeah, we went into the city, and that was an interesting time because I'd got from one bad partnership and I was about to get into a second bad partnership. But the good fortune of the customers that I had met when I was there consulting for that year was that they basically backed me. And they used the word crowdfunding at the moment. But actually, yeah, I guess I was crowdfunded, and it's not a new story. Most people in Melbourne know. I'm not going to make any apologies about it because basically I had negotiated with the owners of what was then a hotel to come in to as a partner. I realised that it was always about them and not about me. And in the end, I was able to snaffle the business and the building as well. Which has kept me very, very, very poor. It's not something that I would suggest to anybody. I didn't have a choice. And all those incredible corporates that I'd got to meet basically crowdfunded me and gave me the money to get me into business because I had nothing. So that's
incredible. Yeah. But you deserve all your success. Yeah, I know you personally.
But I thank those people, Omar, because without them, they believed in me. I was raw. I was honest. I had a dream. And those people are still my friends today.
But you over-deliver on that.
Yeah, well, you know, we all have dreams, don't we?
Absolutely.
Sometimes they don't always work out. My first restaurant was a dream, and I failed. That's okay. Mm.
Yeah, that's great. And you put a lot of effort into this, and it's great that you found, like, people helping you out over your journey.
Yes. Yeah.
So how important, like, for, like, a new young restaurateur they want to start today, like, what's important? What would you recommend as, like, tips as a starter? What do they do? Should they choose the right location? What about it? What do you have any tips for them? Like, new young
people coming into business?
Yes.
Well, you've got to do your groundwork. One of the things that I might say is that you nearly need to understand business before opening up any business, be it food or fashion or whatever.
Especially now.
Well, we know what Melbourne's going through at the moment, and COVID didn't help. That absolutely obliterated. I think something like 1,700 city businesses closed during COVID. I can't remember the number, but for every business that closes, one does open. So don't forget that.
Yes.
But I would definitely say you've got to surround yourself with like-minded people, people that have the same dream as you. So not somebody that just works for the money. Yes, you've got to pay them, but they've got to have the same vision. You've got to understand your market. And I do want to talk about that because I'll explain to you why I'm at Caterina's, because the most important job I've ever done is being a mother. And going to the city, I went to the city because I wanted to have a lunchtime business, because I wanted to be a mother and raise my child, our child, Nicholas, my partner, of course. But going back to your previous question, look, I think you need to surround yourself with the right people. Be very focused. So wherever you open up your business, have a look. Is it surrounded by corporates? Is it surrounded by families? Is it a daytime business? Is it a nighttime business? Is it a weekend business? So you, all those factors come into what you do. Costings. Oh, my God, costings are everything. People just think that you can open up and you take money. That doesn't mean you're making money. So you know, that's what I say about having a business understanding.
I wrote it in my book. My recent book, Creating Emotions.
I'm so excited to read your book.
Study accounting before recipes.
Yeah.
That's what most people overlook.
That is a really, that's probably the most important thing you can say to any young person getting into business. And then I guess you're a little bit at the mercy also of the dining public and the media. Yeah. Let's make no mistake about that.
Yeah.
You can have a dream that is not maybe relevant at the time. At the time, let me tell you, it took me 17 years to get a chef's hat, because I think that perhaps I just wasn't relevant. Or I opened up in a basement. I was in the non-groovy part of Melbourne. Everything was going against me, to be quite honest. And that's okay, because there were lots of detractors that said, you're never going to make it, Katerina. Basements don't work. Where you are in the city, you're not going to make it. And because you only do lunch, you don't do restaurant hours. So I had to work out my market. And I'd like to say I proved some of those people wrong. But I might have doubted myself. It was part of my dream.
And on this topic, Katerina, Ben Sherry wrote it in his memoir just recently about food critics. But how do you feel about food critics in today's age? Are they still relevant?
That is such a loaded question, and you know it. critics. I think one comment that Ben made was about critics having to understand what a restaurant is, understanding food, but completely, not just putting out a steak with some fries, perfectly cooked fries, of course, maybe in duck fat, but you have to understand what goes on behind the scenes. You know, in today's market, you would probably say that to set up a business, $1 million doesn't get you very far, does it?
Not really.
And
not
how long
today's.
Does it but how long does it take you to earn $1 million?
Let's say at a 10% profit margin, that is your money on your bank account,
yes,
you probably need to make $15 million in revenue.
Yeah. Do you see what I'm trying to say?
So it's probably take a few years.
So when the critics go out there, and I guess are maybe not so kind to restaurants, you would like to think that there's a little bit of integrity. Don't close them down with the stroke of a pen. Bad restaurants are not going to survive anyway. If they haven't done their homework, those restaurants won't survive. So I guess we don't need people to close them down, give them a chance.
You said it took you 17 years to be on the guide.
I was on the guide or in the guide from the start of Katerina's, because I came from a restaurant that already had a hat. So I was in the guide, but no, I didn't. I never received a chef's hat. And I used to think, am I not good? You always second guess yourself, question yourself. And I had some really damn good chefs. I mean, Rita McCarley, she was the queen in Melbourne. She is the queen still for me. Now, she worked for me. We didn't get a hat. So was it the place? Was it downstairs? There were so many things maybe going against me. I don't know.
But do you think it's related to, like, could it be to, like, a gender kind of, like, because it's harder, I guess, like, for a woman to be in business, right?
It's probably... I mean, how do you feel being a woman in business?
Bloody hell, it was bloody tough, and it still is. I mean, things are changing. I mean, let me just tell you, when I worked at the Carlton Football Club, and that was a really male environment, with no disrespect to them, it's just the way it was. I mean, I physically got manhandled and was thrown against a cool room door. Whoa. I mean, wow. do you know what that means? You can't do that today. There were no rules in those days, but that was a reality of my job. I wasn't the only one. That guy, by the way, got sacked and I did get a personal apology. But I'd like to think that people like me have paved the way for women out there, that we should be equal. You judge us on what we do.
Yes.
But being a female, look, I've just gone through a pretty rough period in my life, which we will discuss later on. It hasn't been easy being a woman, even in the building trade, if I could just say. You know?
In fact, you had a pretty catastrophic event.
Yes, back in May, we burst water main on Queen Street, completely flooded my restaurant, my beloved restaurant. I still remember the day that I walked in. I just was in shock. This year marks 29 years for me on October the 25th. And in my 29th year, I have been out of work since May. Sure, I have insurance. Good luck with that, guys. Oh, my gosh, I've learnt plenty about insurance company. I've learnt plenty about building companies wanting to get me back up and running. But it's my place. You're not going to tell me how my place has to look. You're not going to give me a cheaper door just because you're going to make extra money out of me. No, no, no. So I have learnt to really fight. I'm not going to lie about that. And I am Italian. I'm a bit loud and I'm a bit emotional. But, you know, if it was any other person maybe, a young woman in her 20s, she may not be as forthright as me and as vocal as me. So I don't know. You just got to be strong about it.
Yeah, that's amazing. So you were also like talking about like work-life balance in that sense.
About
you said work-life balance. You know, you said like you choose also the location because of you could do like lunches and, you know, spending more time with your family.
Yes, well, let me just tell you, when I opened up Caterina's, which is 1995, and our daughter, our adorable daughter Allegra, was born in 1998, I didn't have any help in Melbourne because my family's in the country. And my partner's family, well, they were aging. So it was a very lonely journey where my daughter was born and literally she was in that office for the first year of her life. Not the perfect way to enjoy the first year of your child's life.
I can't relate to that question. So my daughter was the same when she was 2 years old.
It's tough where mothers are meeting and having coffees. I couldn't do any of that because I was running a business. And at the time, Nicholas, my partner, who is a musician, but he was in the kitchen, he trained himself to make pasta. Because, you know, there was no money at the time. As I said, we went in on the back foot. Even though they lent me money, I still had to pay it back. So let's not, you know,
people didn't give me money for nothing. Now and they think it came easy, but it didn't at all.
Look, I remember at the time when I went to the bank, I mean, banks now have really tightened up. But at the time, if I didn't have those incredible guys at the bank vouching for me, you know, they were never going to advance me the amount of money. And look, what we borrowed at the time might equate to, in today's terms, way over $3 million.
Wow. Like,
I was a young woman with the dream of having a baby and I had all this debt and I was drowning. I did second guess myself because I didn't know whether I could survive. And the first 2 years, we made absolutely no money. Just think about it, $3 million in today's market.
Incredible.
So maybe I had guts. I mean, Nicholas was behind me and my family, but it was very scary for me at the time. It's all right sitting here now, you know, 29 years later, but
with all the experience,
I still remember it.
I believe entrepreneurial people are a little bit crazy because otherwise, if you understand, you know, how much work there is behind, you wouldn't start.
No, you probably wouldn't.
But as Tony Robbins says, if you want to take the island, burn the boat. What does it mean? If you don't know how to swim, you want to go to the island, burn your boat, you're going to go to the island. That's what happened probably.
Well, look, my first restaurant that I opened up in Fitzroy, let me tell you, because we did that from scratch, I actually had my own stamp on it in that I had beautiful walls. I bought Murano chandeliers from Italy. I mean, beautiful, the best toilets. Toilets are so important. I had them built, and I remember one of the reviewers at the time, I think it might have been Stephen Down, saying, impeccable toilets. This gorgeous Veneto guy did it, a friend of my dad's did it for me. When I went to the city, I inherited a really ugly downstairs building with crappy toilets. It was a beer-soaked place. I mean, it's taken me all of 29 years to actually make it my own. I'm a collector of antiques. That is my other passion. I love old stuff. Don't give me new stuff, not interested. Yeah, I might want lovely concrete floors, but the other stamp is my personality. And I go to auction, I buy online, I do all sorts of stuff. So it's taken me 29 years to do that. So when I went there, I didn't have the beauty because I didn't have the money. So as I said, you can have this dream, but it does take a long time to get to the end point.
Mm. I've been many times to your restaurant and it's always been impeccable, a beautiful touch. Is the new Caterina, let's say, after the catastrophic flood, going to be the same? Going to be a little bit different?
Mm. Well, can I just tell you that the, I guess the beautiful thing about Caterina is being underground, it's very private. So people own corners. They own tables. I can rattle them all off. And that's how it goes. It's very private. It's not like a club. I know that people have described my place as a club. It's not that. It's just that people are doing business. I wish the government would listen that they should make, you know, food tax deductible because people still do business around tables.
They do.
When that came through, when they took away, you know, the fringe benefits tax, I couldn't understand that because they're also taking away the food from people that work there, the waiters, the bread people, whatever it is, the cleaners. I mean, come on, governments, listen to us. We need your help at the moment because, hospitality is pretty scary. But they do business around my tables. So it was a very specific business model. And for 2 years, we made no money. It was really, really difficult. Now it's a bit different and I've learned a lot of stuff and I've grown as a person. And so I've grown with my staff. My staff are everything to me. They're like my extended family. I don't have too many enemies, I'd like to think. Maybe a couple of people that finished off a bit badly.
That's okay.
You know,
we all have those ones.
What happens? You just move on. For every person like Caterina that closes, there'll be somebody else taking my spot. Don't think that you are that special because there'll be someone right behind you. And so with staff, you're going to miss them, but there'll be somebody else, of course. Mm.
Yes, sure. And how do you handle like demanding like customers, or how do you train your team to actually?
Especially, you have a pretty powerful crowd, politicians, judges, corporate, like very strong personalities there.
Well, I've grown up. In the early years, I would actually be reactive. Okay. I mean, I have marched people out of my restaurant. I've grabbed them by the hand and walk them out. People that have been disrespectful to my staff, especially some of the girls, have sexual comments. I won't put up with that. I just don't. Not now, you know, because I was one of those victims maybe a long time ago. No, I don't want to use the word victim. It was because it was a different time.
Yeah.
But if somebody makes a complaint and they're really unhappy, it's not about the money for me. Because if you don't try to make it up to them, it's such an emotive thing, eating. They're paying money. Oh, my God, just give them another meal. Do the right thing. Yes. You don't want unhappy customers because they're only going to tell another 10 people, they're going to tell another 10 people, and then it goes on.
Yeah, but sometimes you have those customers that they think because they are paying, they own you.
Why? Yes, that's right.
They're not, you know.
Yeah, no. Loyalty does run for me in my restaurant. I get loyalty because I get a lot of regulars back. But, you know, the people that come once a year, they're not going to be just loyal to me. They try all sorts of places, right? And so, as I said, it's not about the money for me. I want them to go away happy and I want them to come back. And so my staff are trained to make sure that we deal with most complaints the right way.
Yeah.
And that's how it should be.
Yeah, that's great. And you have a great and like leadership style. How does it work with your staff? Is it always, do you have someone eventually?
That's going to take over? Who wants my business? Nobody wants it. Look, I've had my manager has been with me for 29 years. That young lady who's now, you know, the mother of two boys.
A mother and a woman.
She's a woman. Oh, yeah. Yes. Do you know, she came to me at my first restaurant and did a year while she was at hospitality school at William Anglis. She went to work at the Hyatt under people like Shannon Bennett was there, like major people were there. The gentleman from Donovan's, Kevin Donovan, who recently passed away. So she had great training. When she came to me, she was young and raw, but she has grown up with me. 29 years, I owe her so much. Mm. And they call her Katarina's. They call her Katarina. That's the reality of it. She can be Katarina. She takes away a lot of stress from me, but she loves the clients as much as me. Now, you know you need a really strong, she's not a number two, she's a number one like me.
I can confirm that. I know her.
you know, but you know in any business, you cannot run it alone. You need a team behind you. Incredibly important.
Do you think there is a common misconception about what it means being a successful restaurateur?
Well, the misconception is that they only see you when you're successful. So you've already done the hard work. I mean, I've done 29 years. So if you had asked me that question, you know, 15 years ago, I might have a very different answer. But success, wow. If you think about Melbourne, let's face it, the people that are really making the money and able to open up multiple restaurants are the, you know, the groups, you know. And I've got to lump people like the Andrew McConnells, incredible. Chris Lucas, great vision, you know. These are the people that I guess are doing really well because they open up multiple places and maybe there's a lot more money behind them. Individuals, you know, they often say that if you can get past your first year, you're lucky. Second year, you're even luckier. By the fifth year, you're out. You know, most people don't stay the journey unless they are people that we do it for passion. You know, I could have got another job and which would have paid a lot more money. But for me, you know, since my flood happened, do you know what it's like when I wake up in the morning? I don't hear my chefs in the kitchen. The smell of the coffee, the music. Because my partner is from the music industry, you know, my brother-in-law, Bennett Slane, so music's been a big part of my life. It's how we raised our daughter, listening to the Eagles in the car when I used to drive her to school. But I need to have sounds in my restaurant. But the sounds don't just come from the music. It is the coffee machine. It's the banging of the pots. It's when they're rolling the pasta on the pasta machine. Do you know how much you miss it when it's not there? It's been there for 29 years for me. And that is my extended family. The people that stop in, I know their wives, their ex-wives, their partners, their ex-business partners. I know everything about my clients and they trust me. You learn to say very little.
Yeah.
You have to keep something for yourself. I don't want to be controversial. That's not my role. My role is to be a good role model for women, but for, in general, restaurateurs. And I hope that part of my journey can, I don't know, just share some positivity in a really difficult environment.
And can you share with us some of the craziest stories that happened to you in your dining room?
Do you know my daughter wants me to write a book, but I can never mention names because, I mean, I had a spy with an Adam apple that walked in. He was dressed as a she, and she was here on a mission, and there was a lawyer sitting with her, and I knew she was here for big business. It was just a crazy time in my life. One of the funniest stories is when there was an arrest, white collar crime, and it was arrest in the middle of the restaurant. I had no idea that this young guy had walked in, and he was meeting somebody who was obviously an undercover policeman. There was another policeman planted at the bar, and all I remember is there was a judge sitting on the table not far away. And all I can remember, Tanya was in the dining room with me and I was at the other table. And you know, our story is that we tell a story of the specials.
Yeah.
You know, I know that reviewers hate it, but I'm sorry. That's just what we do. I'm not changing what I've done for all this time. Because people, it's a way of also interacting with your customers. If you hand a menu, that doesn't tell the story. I've got to tell the story. You know, my mother, who's 87, she grows herbs for me. She gets that up from her garden and hands them clean and ready for my staff to use. I'm going to tell that story. Or when my brother used to go fishing. You know, there are things that I can say that are personal to me. Customers grow with you. They know my family even though they don't know them. But anyway, we were there doing our specials. And all I remember hearing was, now put your hands on the table and make it easy for yourself and for the restaurant. And I just remember, like, I could just see this guy. Anyway, basically what happened, it was an arrest. And I remember he had a Crown Lager in those days. We had Crown Lagers. Now we don't. But and he said, don't cuff me and let me pay for the beer. And I said, yeah, let him pay for the beer.
Please.
Yeah, I need every cent. That was a funny bit. And they marched him out. And even though that, but there were customers everywhere, it was hysterical. Everybody just, the whole dining room stopped.
Yeah.
And there was the day that, you know, a guy had a heart attack. There were 110 people in my dining room. You know what lunches are like, Omar?
Crazy.
They're not night times.
No, it's crazy.
Night time's different. You have lunch, it's one hit. And a guy had a heart attack and dropped dead. And I said, I don't care. Stop service. Stop cooking. We're going to try and save this man. And I said to the people at the time, do you know what? If you can't deal with saving a life, it's much more important than the money I'm going to take today. And you know what? They accepted it. There was the time when there was the gas, oh, my God, the gas strike. And I did something so illegal because I grew up on a farm. You know, there was no electricity. And we had burners, but we had no lights, we had no nothing. And I remember my brother bringing down this huge gas bottle. I don't know how many litres that is, if you call it in litres. Totally illegal, brought it inside the restaurant. So, sorry, we had electricity, but we didn't have the gas. And we just were cooking with this illegal thing. It could have blown up at any time. It was just the craziest stuff. Because I'm in a basement, by the way, so remember, when lights go out, it's pitch black, which is how I walked into my restaurant after the flood.
Yeah.
I walked into sludge.
Wow.
So just being a basement is very different to having a restaurant with windows, because you're in pitch black.
Yeah. Mm,
there you go.
Yeah, amazing. From the 90s until today, what had been changing with social media and exposure and other restaurants, like, you know?
Do you think social media has helped or damaged the true essence of dining experience? What's your take on that?
Social media is everything, for God's sake. Look, you know, I'm not trained in social media. I have a daughter that assists me. And we don't need to do a lot of social media only because we already have an established clientele. If you're starting out, it is everything. I mean, I look at social media to see the restaurants that open. I look at social media for any bad stories that are happening, anybody that's going broke. I know all of it from social media.
But you've been a pioneer as well, like with TV shows back in the days.
Well,
you were one of the first, especially
in Melbourne,
Australia.
And I was really raw. I had shocking makeup. I couldn't even look into the camera. I was hopeless.
I think you were great.
You're great in front of the camera. You're probably already.
No, but that's because I'm talking like myself. When I did the Channel 7 show on Channel 7, I was a bitter failure. I was on the second season of My Restaurant Rules. I was a totally bitter failure because there were rules and regulations. You know, you had to look a certain way, act a certain way. I mean, remember that time. I was a failure. And it only lasted for 2 years, of course. And Matt Moran was on the show. And Pat from the Women's Weekly and Kat, it was Matt, Pat and Kat. I remember it was a bit of a slogan. I was a failure, I say that, because I didn't enjoy commercial TV. But Channel 31, oh my God, I don't think I realised how much it was going to help me in my commercial life. But most importantly, I wasn't there interviewing people, famous people. I was interviewing nonnas. Nicholas, my partner's dream, was to tell a story about Italian nonnas. They're going to die. They're going to be a past generation soon. And where are those stories captured? Nowhere. You can get one of their recipes. It doesn't tell the story. Do you know what I mean by that?
Yeah, it's tradition. Especially in Italy, it's tradition, right?
Yeah. And, you know, it was really funny because I didn't have to conform. I didn't have to show my breasts. I could do whatever I wanted. And, of course, my thing is just that I wear crosses. But I remember people ringing in to Channel 31 complaining that I was using crosses as a fashion item. Well, I'm sorry. I'm going to... And really? I used to wear up to 3 or 4. You'll see the old shows. I just went right against them. I said, but this is me. It's my fashion style. You know, I always modelled myself on a Madonna without the conicals. You know, I didn't have conicals. I wasn't a 36C or whatever. Anyway, that's a joke, but it's not. But the thing is that I've always stayed true to myself. And if you have to conform, then you're just not being true to yourself, I think. Mm.
How can someone run a successful restaurant in today's market with today's economy, especially because there is you know, there is a problem with pricing, inflation, how much customers are willing to pay for things right now.
Yes, it's a changing market. So, look, people said post-COVID, I mean, a lot of people went out of business, that it was going to be hard. Let me tell you, I had two of the biggest years of my career post-COVID because people missed us. They missed going out into the social environment. You know, it's all good and well getting food delivered at home, but it takes away the social aspect of going out, right?
Yeah.
So that's the first thing. So we had two strong years. Now at this point in time, we're in a lull. And once again, if you haven't done your sums, I would say this, that if you're going to open up a business, I think you need 6 months' expenses in the bank, and most people don't have it. I don't know whether you agree with that, but...
I agree, but that's a lot.
It's a lot. So 6 months is wages and rent, because they're your two biggest things usually, forgetting all the incidentals, because then you've got insurance and everything else, and then just the food and wine. I mean, I started off with 30 wines when I started off. I didn't have enough money to buy alcohol. You know, now I've got 500 different wines on my list. I know that because they took 9,000 bottles off my premises after the flood. Am I crazy investing in that? Well, no, it's not a bad idea.
That's a compounding investment.
It is
over
a compounding.
30 years
you
almost.
Add money to every year you hold it on or hold on to the stock. And people find some old stuff. It's hard to get old wines. So my thing is don't start on the back foot. If you have a dream and you haven't got the money, don't do it because you won't get through that first year. It's really hard eating baked beans for a year. You know what I mean by that?
I do.
I love baked beans, but I ate baked beans for 2 years. So that's the way I see it. Don't start off on the back foot. And also try to, as I said before, read the market. If you're going into the suburbs, you might be more likely to have families or children and prams. You've got to account for that. In my restaurant, I mean, I take prams, but we don't get those sort of people in because it's a corporate market.
Yep.
And so I need more wines to make them happy. I remember customers saying to me, you know what, Katerina, you just don't have enough wines on your list. If we want a choice of French champagnes, and they didn't come to me. So in order to get that market, I had to increase my list. I mean, these are all the things I've learned along the way.
It's incredible. Thank you.
Yeah, that's amazing. So in general, during COVID, of course, everything changed and then like people want to socialize again. But how the business changed with the delivery app and all these new like technologies and stuff?
How has business changed? Well, at the end of the day, there's something really basic in running a business. You need to have a menu. You need to have a relationship with your supplier. You need to order the food. It needs to get delivered at the right time, not at 1 o'clock when I'm in full service, which is why I got my loading zone reinstated. Thank you to one of the councillors in Melbourne. I made a bit of a song and dance about that. I mean, they come to your door, they can't find a spot, they've got to park two blocks down the road, and they bring my deliveries after midday. There's no sense in that, is there?
I never thought about that.
Yeah, yeah.
So thank you for letting me know. Thank you.
It happened to me and I had a complaint and City of Melbourne reacted. Thank you. And you have to be able to pay your bills.
Yeah.
Okay? So I don't know that that's actually ever changed in the 29 years I've done business. Once they used to let you get out to 3 months, that's not happening because the people that are supplying, they are also not all big business and they need payment so that they can buy their next slot. So I don't think that's changed. I think it's a moving market with wines. Look, I've got a clientele that's not really interested in orange wines. I've tried to like them. Maybe I don't understand them. I don't have a list of orange wines. Whereby once I used to sell Shiraz or the top end, you know, Penfolds, oh my God, the Henschke's. My market's changed. They want Italian wines. They come to Katerina's for Italian wines.
Yeah.
So I've had to move with the markets. As I said, it depends the sort of business you are running. You have to work with your market.
Yeah.
So that's really, really important.
And that's great. Like, so the music, the atmosphere, and the basement, that's all great. So it seems like you have a lot of attention to details. Is that like, does it make the experience unique for your customers?
Well, as I said, there are so many fantastic restaurants. Anybody should be able to cook a steak. Any trained chef should be able to do a bolognese. Whether you put Vegemite in it like Nigella Lawson, or whether you just do a basic one, bolognese style out of Emilia-Romagna, it's not about that. We've all got our own take on things. So it's really important, but it's how people feel in a room. And that's where service for me is at the top of the tree. Because let me say, I'll say this to you. If you have great food but average service, they're not coming back.
Yeah.
But if you have maybe an average meal but incredible service, you'll get them back at least once.
Yeah.
So that's the power of front of house, because there is a power in front of house that I think people often forget. So really, that's really important. I think music, like I don't like restaurants that are dead silent. I don't. I like sounds. You've got to think about, for example, what's on the ground and bouncing sounds. So I have gone from a floorboards to polished concrete, and I still have half the restaurant carpeted. But I got an acoustics engineer in to teach me how sound develops. And I realised that the sound on wood is a different sound to concrete, but it's not necessarily noisier. It's a different pitch. So I educate myself in things like that. Do you know what I mean? I think in today's market, you've just got to get the sums right. I'm going to just bang on about this because that is still going to be the most important bit. And I go back to what I said before. Clean toilets, good front of house.
Yeah, what I was saying before is like, sometimes you get to a restaurant and the toilet is really dirty, so it's not really a good impression before you're just actually sitting on a table, if it makes sense.
Oh.
I mean, I expect the kitchen to be more clean, but in general, like the impression passed through like toilets too, right?
But you're right, but you see, I had old toilets for nearly 25 years because the body corporate wouldn't let me change them. And then recently I said, oh, bugger it, I'm just going to... And it costs a lot of money. I mean, I think I've got, let me see, six cubicles and urinals. That's a lot of toilets. So you upgrade that. That's
You've redone everything.
It's not 80,000 or 100,000. It's a hell of a lot more than
that.
I know. And so if we work on the 10% margin that you talked about before, if I've spent 150,000, I've got to turn over 1.5 million just to pay off toilets.
And I believe they complain about that.
Yeah, exactly.
Is that correct?
Yes.
It happened to me the same. So.
No, but my point was that my toilets were old, but they were clean. But they weren't up to scratch with what the market is out there. So I just realised, well, you know, Katerina, I'm going to dedicate this money to my bathrooms. That was important for me. Yeah. I couldn't do it 29 years ago. I couldn't.
As restaurateurs, I believe we don't sell food and wine, but we sell experiences through food and wine.
Absolutely.
That's what I always tell to my staff.
They want to hear the stories. They want to hear stories of what the place was. I mean, places even like Florentino's. I mean, my uncle was a cellar master there under Sindos. There are stories going back. My father, as I said, was at the society. I've got so many stories, so many photos. I mean, it was about the people that ran the places, some of them controversial. But that's what makes Melbourne so special. And you know what? If you have a dream, just go ahead with it. Don't expect to make money. If you're going in just for the money, you're going in for the wrong reasons, okay? You can make money if you're good at it, but that shouldn't be the only focus. Go and get a corporate job
and
if you want to do
time.
That.
And takes time. And you need to have patience and takes time. Katerina, what's next for the new Katerinas? When is the reopening?
Well, do you know what? I'm going to say this. This 6 months off, I have become the client. I haven't been a restaurateur for 6 months. And I have gone out and I've seen what makes me happy. And the most important thing is the word experience. I don't want people kneeling down at my table as if I'm their buddy. You're not my buddy. I don't know you. I'm there with whoever it might be. It could be my partner, my husband. It could be with a business colleague. So I just want to have service. I want to have a bit of respect. I want people to look at me in the eyes when they're... I don't want them to... Now, today we've got... would you like a... No. I want you to look at me in the eyes and pretend if you don't mean it, that you want to serve me. I know there are difficult customers out there. It's got to be in your blood. That's all I'm going to say. So hospitality out there, you know, it's hard to get great employees. It is, but you can get somebody and train them up. So being the client has been the most wonderful part of my time off. Otherwise, I would be crying after what's happened to me.
Can you imagine? When is the reopening?
We are aiming for November 25th, Santa Caterina.
Wow, that's amazing. I love the style.
Oh, vintage. You know I'm a vintage shop, but this is all vintage,
it's
by
Fiorucci.
The way.
It's a Fiorucci.
Yeah. It's Dior, but it's got the Fiorucci. I know Fiorucci really well. Yeah. But I am a vintage shopper. Everybody in Melbourne knows I love secondhand. I'm a greenie.
We all know. Caterina, thank you so much. For us, it was an honor to have you. Really, it was an incredible interview. We'll definitely come and see you for the opening. And Melbourne, please support this wonderful woman, this wonderful business. Thank you so much.
Omar, Andrea, thank you. I'm honored myself. And as I said, I love hospitality. I love people working within the industry. And I love Melbourne. I love Melbourne. Bring it back to what it was.
Yeah. Grazie mille.
Grazie mille.
We love Melbourne and we love you.
Ciao.
Arrivederci.
Ciao.
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 Welcome to Dining Room Stories with Domar and Andrea, where we take you behind the scenes of the restaurant business world with stories and conversation that inspire.